everyone, and welcome to episode 8, week number 8 of the SmackDown Summary. I'm Kenny McIntosh, and I'm joined, as always, on this show by the lady who loves random fact videos and loves crazy characters, but does not like The Undertaker. She is Sondra. Hi, Sondra.
Hello.
Now, Sondra,
I'm super excited to talk about Kurt Hawkins.
Good God, I knew you would be. Now, I wish I could find this exact tweet. But there's some people I wouldn't bring this up to because I don't think they would find it that funny, but I think you will. Somebody tweeted me yesterday and said that you are the worst type of wrestling fan.
That I'm the worst type of wrestling fan?
And I said, why? Like, what's the reason? I'm going to try and find it here because...
They didn't tag me.
Of course they didn't. Why would you do that? Why would you tag someone? Right, wait a minute. Let me find it here. I might do a bit of creative editing. Year.
Because I saw the tweet where you were like, if you think this Kurt Hawkins stuff is bonkers, imagine how much Sandra's loving it. Then I was like, fact, Kenny knows me pretty well, because yes, I do.
Yes, exactly. It was yesterday. Come on.
You're just too popular on Twitter.
This is great radio, right?
Mm-hmm. Dead air.
Oh, come on, where is it? But basically he said that the reason he thinks you're an awful wrestling fan is because you don't like The Undertaker. That is it.
That's it. That makes you the worst wrestling fan?
Here we go. I'm gonna name and shame this person. Lewis Weapon Carr tweets me and says, Sondra is the worst wrestling fan in existence. So I respond, ha 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 ha, explain please.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he says...
I love that your response is not, no she isn't. She's, what are you talking about? You're like, ha 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 ha, yes I agree, I call her the worst all the time.
Depending what he says here, he could have a point. And his response was, she doesn't like The Undertaker being the main reason, plus... She doesn't like the normal things a wrestling fan should like.
Like what?
But then he comes back to say, but she sure does know her stuff, to be fair to her.
Well, that's good.
So there you go.
I'm glad I know my stuff, even though I'm the worst kind of wrestling fan. I'm really curious now, other than The Undertaker, what else I'm supposed to like. Like.
Well, maybe you can hunt him down.
Maybe.
Maybe. So we're here to talk about SmackDown Live. It is the post-Backlash SmackDown from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Lot to talk about. So let's just get in about it, as they would say in Glasgow. The show opened with AJ Styles coming out with the WWE World Championship around his waist. God, it looks good on him, doesn't it?
There is something that feels so right about one of the actual best wrestlers in the world. Like, maybe the best wrestler in the world right now. Holding the top prize in wrestling in the world. Like, AJ Styles is WWE World Heavyweight Champion, and it just feels so right.
It feels so good. Almost so good that I would sing, but I'm not going to. But and you know, I also kind of want to buy his t-shirt now. That's what marketing does to you.
I know, right?
So he comes out and he tells us, I told you so. You know, he beat John Cena, he beat Dean Ambrose, he's WWE Champion. He's the face that runs the place. And all of a sudden, the music...
And the champ who runs the camp, which he has to repeat like 3 times because the music cue was late. It's not a great week for music cues.
No, the music cue was really bad here because he just kept repeating it. The champ that runs the camp. John Cena's music hits. He makes his big return to SmackDown in Philadelphia. Good reception for John compared to what he usually is.
This crowd seemed very behind John Cena.
They did.
Throughout the night. Like, get into that in the main... You know,
yeah,
they
seemed very, very behind him. So he came out, he got the microphone, and he said that that AJ Styles has something that belongs to him, and he's decided he wants it back. And AJ Styles classically just throws the armband at him. There you go. I don't need it because I've got the WWE Championship. And Cena then said that he still has something that belongs to him, and he decided he wants it back. He needs one more championship to be in the conversation to be the man. He wants to be the 16-time WWE Champion, which I do think is a great story to tell. But then Dean Ambrose's music hits and he comes out and he gets in AJ Styles' face and says that you've made an enemy. your life changes when you make an enemy, and he wants the title back with interest. John Cena then spins Ambrose around, says Stone Cold was right about you in his podcast. You haven't shown the WWE Universe yet that you have any balls. You haven't stepped up. You fell off. Ambrose then responds, he doesn't care what Cena thinks. He called Cena a lazy part-timer. Excellent. Excellent. Said that Cena was better doing morning shows, award ceremonies, movies, whatever else he does, because he can't hang in the ring anymore. He couldn't even get by that chump, AJ, at SummerSlam, so he'd never get through him. Then Shane McMahon comes out to sort it out. The crowd are massively behind Shane.
For some reason, even though he killed all the momentum of the segment.
Shane puts over AJ for beating John Cena clean. Said they tore the house down. Save it backlash, but he told AJ that he took the easy way out. And then Shane proceeded to make a triple threat match for the WWE World Championship at No Mercy with Cena, Ambrose, and AJ. I really loved this opening segment. I thought it was big names, big names. I thought that Ambrose was great. AJ was great. Cena was great. I liked Shane coming out and making the triple threat match. I was very, very happy with this first segment. How did it go for you?
I really liked it. I mean, there were a lot of layers going on, right? Like, I agree, though, with Michael Ferrar. I don't actually know how to pronounce your last name, and I apologize. But on Twitter, he said something like, will someone please tell John Cena that if you haven't held a thing for over 2 years, it does not belong to you anymore?
That's a very fair point.
You know, like, John Cena hasn't had the WWE Championship for a long time. And I get that it's like, I'm John Cena, and so I get this, right? Like, we talked about this on the Backlash Breakdown, right? When I said, why would they make it a triple threat? Why would John Cena be involved in that? And you said, have you ever seen John Cena? You were right. Apparently, all you need to do to be inserted into a triple threat is be John Cena. Repeat. But so that kind of, it did rub me the wrong way a little bit, which actually was interesting because that's kind of what Dean Ambrose was saying, right? Like, Dean Ambrose was saying, no, you're not here. You haven't had that in a long time. Like, I just lost that. I did think it was weird that he said, you know, oh, you couldn't even get by that chump. It's like, well, neither could you, Dean Ambrose. Like, you just lost. What are you even saying? But I thought all the guys here were really, really good. I thought they delivered their lines well. I thought that there was passion in the promo. And, I mean, I'm into it. I don't know why we have to name all of the contenders immediately right after Backlash. Just because now it's, well, we have them. And now we're not, like, building a contender or anything like that, right? Like, we have it set and then we'll just see if we're in a holding pattern of stories or if they do kind of keep building things into the pay-per-view. Because that was my issue before Backlash with the women's match especially, was we weren't building anything. We were just kind of stuck because we knew where we were going on the pay-per-view or whatever. And so storytelling can get stunted. But all that aside, I thought this was a great opener. And I thought Shane did kind of kill the momentum of the segment a little bit because I kind of just wanted to see them keep yelling at each other a little bit more. Because it was going really well and interestingly, right?
But then if you are the general manager of SmackDown,
you're the commissioner.
If you're the commissioner of SmackDown, right, it's your brand, and you want to save this big match for No Mercy, then it makes sense to get involved before it gets physical, right?
Yeah, it does. I kind of wondered why Shane was doing this and not Daniel Bryan.
I kind of like that both of them do different things. Mainly because I like both of them. Like, on Raw, I roll my eyes, but Stephanie going, oh no. But I get that you don't like Shane, so it doesn't work. But then we get the Hype Bros against the Usos.
But I do want to say, too, it's very interesting hearing John Cena called a lazy part-timer. Because that just brings up a whole lot of memories of John Cena versus The Rock, right? Like, you left, you weren't around every night, and John Cena's standard, I'm here every night in, you know, night in, night out. And the weird thing is, John Cena has been here. Like, he's been working SmackDown, and he's been working live events, and he's been doing stuff, but he just hasn't been on TV.
But he also takes time off to film movies, and he also takes time off to film TV shows. Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. I like the tables turned the other way.
I'm curious when Dean Ambrose is going to get this one-on-one rematch that Shane promised him for some reason in the promo.
Could give him a house show. He'll get about 12 at a house show. Yeah. Fine. You can explain it. Now, the Usos debuted new white and red gear. Before we get on to the match, are you happier with the Usos gear, or are you still cock-watching?
No, this was much better.
Okay.
I didn't have to, you know, watch the crotch at all.
Okay, good. So the Hype Bros against the Usos got the victory. over the Hype Bros relatively quickly, which was good. And the Usos were just acting like super heels, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, heel Usos are way better than babyface Usos. It's kind of amazing how, like, even their offense has changed significantly, right? Like, I mean, at Backlash, when they fought the Hype Bros, they won with the submission thing. Like, it's great. I like them being more vicious. It's not just happy kicks.
So then up next, before we get to the next segment, we have Curt Hawkins.
Yes.
Jesus fuck. We have Curt Hawkins saying facts, says a fact while he's his back to the camera, he turns his face around, does a fact to the camera, to the camera in between his legs while he's tucked in. Sandra, on you go.
It's so bizarre, right? Like, it's just so bizarre. And it's basically all these Chuck Norris facts is what they've been doing. And they've been doing it in the vignettes. Like, and what was with the accent that he adopted as he was flipped upside down, looking through his legs backwards, talking about how he gets clocks to tick counterclockwise?
I have no idea what's going on. I feel like SmackDown, you know how, like, if... Like, I don't watch American football or anything like that, but I presume that, like, in sports, maybe there's, like, you know, you pay like $5 million for a big signing or something like that, but then there's like a bunch of like little signings that you could just get like 20 for $5 million. I feel like that's what SmackDown has done. They've got all these random guys: Curt Hawkins, Heath Slater, Jack Swagger,
yeah,
like all these random people. But you know, it's Rhino. Very quirky, Rhino. It's very quirky, and you know. I guess we'll see where they go with it, but like, I knew you'd love it.
Oh, I love it completely. Like, do I expect this to be a main event gimmick? No, of course not. Is this going to be something that's incredibly amusing for a jobber to do? Yes, it is. Like, I mean, I don't know what you and David think of Bo Dallas, because I wasn't listening to that part of the chat, but I mean, I love Angry Poetry Bo Dallas right now on Raw, right? Because he's ridiculous and also has something to believe in. But it's the kind of thing I really like. I like jobbers with personality. And, I mean, who knows? Like, look what they've done with Heath Slater over the course of a couple months. Heath Slater, like, as you said, Heath Slater was nothing. And they brought him in. And now he's the tag team champion. And it doesn't seem like it's super forced. Like, everyone's behind Heath Slater. So, SmackDown's the land of opportunity. Maybe we'll see something interesting for Curt Hawkins. Maybe we won't. Maybe it's just going to be a bunch of wacky vignettes that don't go anywhere, like the Johnny Curtis ones back in the day. I don't really care, because I think they're hilarious and I think they're bonkers. And I want to know what more facts Curt Hawkins has to spout out. And I really hope he has his cane back.
There's a lot of questions about Curt Hawkins that I think will get answered in the next couple of weeks. The Miz then makes his entrance with Maurice. They are going on about, you know, he left Backlash as the champion. He's held the title longer than 132 former IC champs. More prestigious. Then Dolph Ziggler comes out to interrupt. Dolph Ziggler says that he will never be thought of as a top guy because the WWE Universe will always see through him. Miz had a great, great line about where he said, you know, I'm the main event in every show I'm on. And if I was to ever base success on what the WWE Universe thinks, if Dolph ever bases success on what the WWE Universe thinks, he should bury himself just like Ziggler's career, which I thought was a great line.
Yeah, it's interesting that Ziggler is telling Miz the WWE Universe is going to see through you, right?
Okay, yeah, because I thought that the thing that's interesting is, you know, Dolph Ziggler's just come off two pay-per-views where he's lost matches to both champions of the show.
Yep.
So I don't really know what leg he has to stand on, but... You know, to be fair to him, you know, he did say he wants one more match, just the two of them without valets, all that sort of stuff. And I was compelled by the segment. I thought they did well. Daniel Bryan comes out. He says that, you know, he's essentially going to make the match with Ziggler and Miz. Miz refuses, says he wants his contract renegotiated and that he won't defend his championship on any show until he gets what he wants. And then he leaves. Which, again, the story continues.
The story continues, and I really like it. I just think, I just 100% disagree with Dolph Ziggler, right? Like, I think The Miz is fan-freaking-tastic. I'm a huge fan of The Miz. And we'll get into, you know, more Miz fandom later on in the show, but for Dolph Ziggler, of all people, to tell Miz, you're not a top guy, you're not a main eventer. Really, Dolph Ziggler? Really? Like, do you hear you right now? You're Dolph Ziggler. Just settle down.
Then we got a backstage promo where AJ Styles. So AJ Styles has got to find a partner for the main event. It's going to be John Cena and Dean Ambrose against AJ and a partner of his choosing. He goes up and speaks to Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin, who is, I don't think I've ever seen him look any more wooden in a promo.
Really? Have you ever seen a Baron Corbin promo?
Yeah, I don't know. This one was particularly bad. And he said that he'd rather be AJ's opponent because he wants the titles. AJ is still having to try and find a partner. But then Baron makes his entrance, followed by Apollo Crews, which cued my eye roll, which cued Sandra's clapping, which then had Baron
Corbin.
No,
because he wasn't spelling anything today.
Oh, so you only like him when he's spelling.
I like him when he does something with personality.
Which, spelling?
Spelling.
Okay. So Baron Corbin knocks Apollo Crews off the top rope, which was lovely.
I did clap for that.
That's worth clapping for. And then he hit the end of days. Corbin was celebrating the ring when Jack Swagger's music hits. Swagger is now a member of the SmackDown roster, calling himself Jumping Jack Flash, which is like the Whoopi Goldberg movie from years ago. Because as of 12:01 that morning, he was a member of the SmackDown Live roster. And then he was just very random. He was talking about a smoking hot wife. He came to SmackDown to be a big problem. Everybody forgot what he's capable of. SmackDown's the land of opportunity. The crowd didn't really know what to make of it, but he did do the We the People bit at the end, and they did join in for that.
I'm more excited than any human alive about Jack Swagger being on SmackDown.
You are?
Yeah.
The thing about Jack Swagger is, like, I just don't get why he lost to Jinder Mahal on Raw. Like, why is this a big signing? If he just, like, it's not like he. It's
I
not
don't
like
think
he...
it's a big signing. I think it's he got to get out of Raw, and now he is coming over to SmackDown, and they've signed him. It is interesting that, you know, how long did it take Heath Slater to get a contract, and Jack Swagger can just pop on over, right?
You know why he got the contract, though, right? Because he is a former world champion.
Right.
Which I think that is why, that is, if anybody wants to know what was the problem with the previous brand split, Jack Swagger was a world champion. That was the problem with it.
Yeah.
Like, and I like Jack Swagger enough. I actually think he's a good babyface. You know, he proved it against Rusev before and Del Rio. But I just don't think that... I think he's dead. Like, he's just dead of any sort of anything about him.
Well, but, you know, things will change. Maybe SmackDown will do something different. Because Jack Swagger came out and cut that random, ridiculous, weird kind of shit promo, right?
Here's the thing, if he becomes Jumping Jack Flash and brings out his smoking hot wife and just is very random, I'll probably enjoy him a lot more than I have at any other point, so maybe.
I mean, SmackDown's roster is so thin. They have room to play around with these lower-level people and start to tell stories with them and maybe make them into something. And with Jack Swagger, honestly, it's kind of like, you know, does Curt Hawkins really have that much prestige coming in? Like, if you remember who Curt Hawkins was when he left and what Curt Hawkins was doing, he was losing to people in NXT, right? Like, Sami Zayn's NXT debut was against Curt Hawkins. He beat Curt Hawkins in his NXT debut because Curt Hawkins was a jobber on NXT going out, right? Jack Swagger might turn into something interesting. And if he doesn't, and if he's just still kind of Jack Swagger and people just beat him, then I think it's unfortunate because he is a really good wrestler. Like, he's not great at speaking, but there's something about his awkward, like,
the
delivery
lisp is problematic.
It's problematic. There's something I kind of love about how shit he is at speaking.
But that's your thing, though.
But that's my thing.
You love shit people.
I kind of do. I mean, yeah.
Which maybe
you,
is what Lewis...
Like,
maybe it's what,
Mr.
Maybe it's
I
what
Love the Great Khali...
Former World Heavyweight Champion. He sold out buildings in India. He's a legitimate star. Maybe that's what Lewis Weapon Carr has an issue with, is your love of shit people.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe I only like shit things. But no, I mean, I like good things, too.
You do.
But I'm interested to see if they do something with Jack Swagger, and if they do something with Jack Swagger and it ends up being good, then wouldn't that be cool?
It would be. I'm open to anything on SmackDown, and if, put it this way, if somebody said to me, you know, Jack Swagger needs to do something, which show would have more of a chance, I would say it on SmackDown. So
yeah.
I guess we'll see. Becky Lynch comes out as the new WWE SmackDown Women's Champion. She got a You Deserve It chant. She was interviewed in the ring. said that she was excited to be in Philadelphia as Becky Balboa, and whoever she faces, because obviously up next is the five-way for the number one contendership. She said she's a fighting woman, told the rest of the division to come at her. Then we got the five-way with Naomi, Natalya, Nikki Bella, Alexa Bliss, and Carmella to determine the number one contender. This match went fairly long for a women's match on a show, and it was good.
It wasn't
I enjoyed
that long. It.
It
was only like 10 minutes or so, wasn't it? Or
remember the days we used to get 3 minutes?
Well, yeah. But I mean, things are different now.
They are. But you know, it was a decent 10-minute match. And then in the end, I like the kind of story continuity of Carmella hitting her super kick on Nikki, and then Alexa throwing Carmella out to get the pin on Nikki to become number one contender. It's interesting that Alexa Bliss is the first opponent for Becky Lynch. I think that if Alexa Bliss is going to get better, then not that she's not good, but like if she's going to get better, then Becky Lynch is one of the best people to work with.
This is exactly what I wanted to happen. I don't know. Who did you want the first number one contender to be?
Probably Alexa Bliss, to be honest. I didn't really think about it, but I did think about, you know, Nikki and Carmella are already kind of in a feud. I can't really see it being Naomi. Natalia's already been done. So Alexa was kind of the default, right? Like, she would be the choice. It's the fresh match.
Yeah. And for me, I wanted it to be Becky versus Alexa because I really, really love Alexa Bliss. And I think she looked great in this match, and I think she looked great in the Backlash match. And it's interesting when I hear people talk about Alexa and kind of, like, talk about Alexa and Carmella as though they're on the same level.
She's better than Carmella.
She's way better than Carmella. Like,
it's not
way, way better than Carmella. She's way better than Naomi. Like,
Wait. I don't... Like, you dislike Naomi a lot more than I do. I think Naomi...
Because
I think
she's
Naomi,
a bad wrestler.
I think Naomi can be good, but I think there's some times where it doesn't quite click. But then I think that's the same for a lot of people. Like, I wouldn't say that Naomi's bad. I think Naomi's better than Carmella. And... I don't know if I would say Alexa Bliss is better than Naomi. She's definitely not worse.
She's better than Naomi.
We will see at No Mercy, I guess.
Like, the thing with Naomi, and I don't want to just, like, hate on Naomi, but the thing with Naomi is she is very athletic, and that's always the line on Naomi, right? But that doesn't mean she's very good at wrestling.
Well, here's the thing for me, though. So since we've seen Alexa Bliss on SmackDown, there's not been a one-on-one situation where we've really seen her shine. So, you know, No Mercy, which is where the match is taking place with Becky and Alexa Bliss, that's her first chance to really show. Because in a five or a six way, you're kind of getting your shit in, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're getting your own stuff in. You don't really have the chance to show that you can have a good 10, 15, 20 minute match.
No, you don't. And I mean, I guess, yeah, that's true, because you haven't seen like her matches with Bayley and some of her matches.
But she did look very good at Backlash. I'll give her that.
Yeah, and I like the story of Alexa Bliss being the opportunistic one, right? Like, that makes her such a dick. And then on Talking Smack, when she's saying, you know, like, this is exactly where I should be. This is exactly where I deserve to be. Like, she didn't even hit her finisher on Nikki Bella. She got the pin off of Carmella's superkick, which I didn't realize was a finisher, but okay. And like, I didn't realize it was a finisher for Carmella, I should say. I know it is for some people now. But I really like the story of Alexa Bliss being super opportunistic, but also thinking that she just deserves everything. And she looks so great in her new Harley Quinn getup, too. Like, I'm a big fan, and I think Alexa could be a big star.
She's certainly on the rise, so we'll see how she does at No Mercy. AJ Styles asked Kane to be his tag team partner next. Kane laughed and walked away. Then we got Shane coming out to bring out Heath Slater and Rhino to sign the contract. But before they could sign anything, the Ascension, Sondra's favorite tag team of the past, the Ascension
yeah.
come out to challenge Heath Slater and Rhino, and Heath Slater and Rhino got a victory over the Ascension.
I thought Heath Slater did sign the contract.
Did he?
I think so.
I don't think he did. Because remember on was it Talking Smack? He was Talking Smack that Renee asked Daniel Bryan, did he sign the contract? And Bryan was like, I don't know.
Oh, I thought he signed it, but I could be wrong. I'm not sure. I know the Ascension came out to challenge for the tag team titles, and Heath Slater was kind of like, I don't know if I want to. Because I thought he signed it and the crowd cheered.
Did he?
I thought so. I could be wrong. I'm not sure. But, I mean, the Ascension came out to challenge for the tag team titles, and Heath Slater looked a little hesitant, like, I don't know, there's a table right here, and there's carpet, and now's not the time or place. And then, of course, Shane McMahon's like, this is the time and the place. You're going to defend your SmackDown Tag Team Championships. And for a second, just because it's Heath Slater and just because he's been through so much, right?
Oh,
and
don't say this.
For
you
a
really thought?
Second, I didn't really think. But for a second, I had this moment of dread where I was like, they're not gonna do this, not the Ascension. And then I was like, no, it's just the Ascension. It's just the most dominant tag team in the history of NXT dominance. It's only the Ascension. They don't win anymore.
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought it was good that it's good for Slater and Rhino to have a victory on the first show.
Yeah, I like that. I did like it. If they would have taken the titles, oh boy, I would have been raging. But
yeah, I mean, the Ascension are nothing, so no. It's fine. Then AJ Styles ran into, well, this is just, good God. AJ Styles runs into Daniel Bryan, says he doesn't need a partner. Bryan said it was, sorry to hear that, because Bryan had actually found a partner for AJ Styles.
Because at the beginning, he did say, you have to find a partner or one will be appointed for you.
Yeah, so yeah, I guess to that point, he hadn't been able to find one yet. And then Daniel, now, were you watching this live?
No. I was not, but I did avoid Twitter.
Okay, so you didn't have this spoiled. So when Daniel Bryan said,
I knew that he was going to be on the show, though.
Ellsworth?
Yeah.
So did you know when he said, we've appointed your partner, who it was going to be?
I did.
Oh, because I didn't, and I just laughed so hard. Like, because when Bryan was like, sorry to hear that, because I've got a partner for you, and in walked the gormless James Ellsworth. Oh my God. I laughed so hard because I just wasn't expecting it. I was not expecting that James Ellsworth was going to turn up. Like, of all the people in all the land.
James Ellsworth.
James Ellsworth, who does not look like he has a human face.
No.
Turns up. AJ looks devastated. Utterly devastated. Because essentially, he'd probably do better on his own than having Ellsworth as his partner.
Well, that was kind of his point, wasn't it? That he said he didn't need a partner and he could just handle this on his own. I mean, I guess he could just not tag in James Ellsworth. But yeah, he looked pretty disgusted about the idea of James Ellsworth. It was very good to see James Ellsworth back. It was funny because I was watching SmackDown after I got home from work. And then David McCutcheon tweeted me and said, hey, we're actually watching it together because we were about at the same point in the show as as each other. So of course, people were tweeting David like crazy, saying, James Ellsworth is on SmackDown. James Ellsworth is on SmackDown. And David was just beside himself with glee that James Ellsworth had returned. And so everybody was like, David's got to be on the SmackDown summary now to talk about James Ellsworth. I will say, if I don't get to be on the Raw Rundown to talk about Bayley when she shows up, you know, it's okay. Yeah. Not that we wouldn't love to have David here.
Of course.
On the SmackDown summary. But, he is off doing other things right now. But
I'll tell you this, if James Ellsworth turns up again, David has an open invitation.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If you need to come on the show and gush about James Ellsworth, David, totally, totally fair. Totally understand.
Yeah, do you really think Sandra's the type of person that will not understand that? Of anyone that I know.
Oh yeah. Of course. But no, it was pretty funny to see James Ellsworth and to see AJ's reaction to James Ellsworth, I think just sold it. And then Daniel Bryan standing there going, no, this is great. I'm very proud of myself with this decision.
It was very funny. Randy Orton comes out. He talks about Bray Wyatt. Finally, Bray Wyatt turns up. And they go back and forth. A lot of metaphors flying about. And in the end, the lights go out. Wyatt was at ringside. And Orton was sort of begging him to get in the ring. Lights go out again. And Eric Rowan is in the ring. And he attacks Orton. In the end, Orton ends up giving him an RKO. And that's it. It's funny that we did the Backlash breakdown. And we were talking about the Wyatts and a possibility of reformation or moving on. And it seems that they have now put Eric Rowan back with Bray Wyatt less than a month after breaking them up again.
It's so weird, isn't it? Like, what was the point of breaking them up and then just having Eric Rowan be with them again?
Every
it's just
time
so
you do
directionless.
This, every time that you take Rowan away from Bray Wyatt, you put him back. Every time you take him back, it means less. And, like, I feel bad for saying this. I, like, sighed when it was Rowan in the ring.
Yeah, I wanted it to be Luke Harper.
I mean, I guess that would be more fresh, but still, like, I don't want to see the Wyatts back together unless they're going to do something. I don't want to see the same thing again. I'm just not interested. It doesn't do anything for me. I'd rather Wyatt got some new family members or something else, because the Rowan and Harper thing is dead. It's been done so much, and they've not done anything good with it.
Driven into the ground. I mean, on Talking Smack, Alexa Bliss talks about Carmella and the definition of insanity, right? Like, trying the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different result. Like, yep. Bray Wyatt says in his promo about Randy Orton, he says, "A good man knows when to stay down, Randy." And I think I put on Twitter, I'm like, do you hear you right now? Like, and you know how much I loved Bray Wyatt. And I can't be bothered with this anymore. It's gotten to the point where it's just so sad, because Bray Wyatt's not reacting. He's not adapting. He's not growing. He's not changing. He's rocking in a chair in a smoky room, kicking his kids out of the house, bringing them back in, doing the same thing over and over.
What they should do with Bray Wyatt is they should figure out where they want him to be at WrestleMania, come up with something really good for him to do at WrestleMania, and work their way back. That's what they used to do when wrestling made a lot of money. They used to book things like 9 months to a year in advance and book backwards. And guess what? People bought it.
And sometimes stories, like, because I'm always of two minds about it, right? Like, I don't want to just be focused on, you know, WrestleMania to WrestleMania, because I want the stuff in the middle to make sense and I want the stuff in the middle to matter. But none of this is mattering.
But that's
why
you build back.
And it's so directionless. Like, I have no idea what Bray Wyatt's goal even is, because he's just saying that he gave Randy Orton a way out, and he gave Randy Orton, you know, he tried to give Randy Orton a gift or whatever. Like, he gave him an out and he gave him a chance to get away, and then he got beat by Kane. Like, Bray Wyatt, I don't believe that you are scary or whatever. Like, I'm actually on Randy Orton's side when he is like, yeah, you're the face of fear because you're afraid. Randy Orton's making sense. Like, it pains me to say that, because I really love Bray Wyatt so much, but I mean, what even? Like, I was listening to the Sam Roberts podcast actually just a bit before we started recording, and he made a good point. Like, shouldn't, if we're talking about the storyline and what happened at Backlash, like, shouldn't Bray Wyatt have beaten Kane so that he looks like a little bit of a threat to Randy Orton? Like, shouldn't he have beaten Kane even with interference so that you kind of go into it going like, oh, maybe Bray Wyatt could stand up to Randy Orton. Maybe this will be interesting. Maybe the drama of the story will actually be compelling. But he didn't, and he just loses all the time, and he never does anything and never accomplishes anything. And it's frustrating because he's so talented and so good, and I want to be behind him, and I just really wish they would do a character reboot and turn him babyface and do something else, because right now, what even is the point?
Well, like, that's, I mean, my whole thing about suggesting WrestleMania or something is because there needs to be an end goal for Bray Wyatt somewhere.
Yeah.
And they need to find out where that's going to be, whether it's SummerSlam or WrestleMania or whatever pay-per-view it is, and build back from that. And find a way to get to that with weekly stories. Like, I always talk about, you know, if you go back and look at The Undertaker and Kane, they started their story on October 5th, 1997. And it built to WrestleMania every week. Twists and turns every week. And it was good. It was compelling. It can be done. It's not that hard. So they just need to figure that out, because Bray Wyatt is drastically becoming just another guy. But it's funny, because when push comes to shove, look at the Royal Rumble this year. The one guy that everybody wanted to beat Triple H wasn't Dean Ambrose, who was in at the end. It wasn't Roman Reigns. It was actually Bray Wyatt, because people were behind him so much.
That's why I feel like if they do something, if they tweak his character, if they change something, we could get behind him again. I don't think it's a lost cause, but I think they're trying to turn it into a lost cause way too quickly. Like, because the more he loses and the more they just keep, you know, splitting the family and unsplitting the family and Face of Fear, Eater of Worlds, I Am a God. No, you're fucking not. Like, you're not right now. Do something else. React to loss.
The hyperbole is over.
Yes.
Like, we've heard enough of it.
We've heard it.
So, I guess we'll see. I mean, we're obviously going to get Orton and Wyatt, but yeah, who knows where it goes from there. I'm more intrigued to see where Bray Wyatt goes post Randy Orton. I feel like Orton's going to go with AJ Styles.
Yeah.
But I don't know where Bray Wyatt goes.
Orton goes with AJ Styles, then Randy Orton's going to have to win that feud, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
Which, I mean, I think we're just at the point where, I forget who said it on Twitter, but they said, like, Bray Wyatt's ability to lose to top guys and still be compelling is his greatest blessing and his greatest curse. Because, yeah, he is compelling in these matches and when he's doing stuff, but it's also meaning he's just not going anywhere.
To be fair, though, Bray Wyatt never has classic matches.
Bray Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan was pretty freaking good.
That was 2.5 years ago.
I'm just saying.
But that's what I mean. You can't, if your last classic match was 2.5 years ago, it's not good.
No.
Like.
But it means he's capable of it.
It does. Well, yeah, it does, but.
But he needs a compelling story and a compelling anything. Something. To be able to do it.
Well, do you know what, though, in saying that? Cesaro's managed to have plenty of compelling matches without any stories. So
true. I'm saying Bray Wyatt is a guy who needs the story and who needs...
Yeah, he does need the story. So you know, the thing is, we're all on Bray Wyatt's side here. You know, so yeah. Hopefully they can do something. So AJ Styles makes his entrance to the main event. He looks absolutely miserable. James Ellsworth runs out like he's just found out he's on The Price is Right. And is attacked from behind by The Miz with a skull crushing finale in the ramp. Ellsworth is out. Miz is in. Dean Ambrose and John Cena against The Miz and AJ Styles. Fun main event. In the end, Ambrose ends up sending AJ to the floor as Cena hits the AA on Miz and gets the victory. Ambrose and Cena are victorious. And then after the match, when Ambrose and Cena were briefly sort of celebrating, Ambrose had a bit of a sour look in his face and ended up hitting the dirty deeds on Cena. The crowd booed.
The crowd Dean booed Ambrose. A lot.
Yeah, they booed Dean Ambrose hitting dirty deeds on John Cena as AJ Styles kind of walked up the ramp. I like the storyline progression here. I like the fact that Ambrose and Cena are kind of at odds here because they both want the championship, and I think ultimately them being at odds will be their downfall and no mercy. But what did you think of this main event and the kind of story they're telling?
I love the story they're telling. I think it's great. I think it was a really fun main event too. I wish The Miz didn't have to take a pinfall. Like, I get it, mostly because you don't really want to pin AJ Styles because he's the WWE champion. But The Miz is the Intercontinental champion. And so that kind of bugs me in a way, but it was John Cena too. And like it or not, he's John Cena, right?
The face that runs the place.
No, that's AJ Styles now.
No, he's the champ that runs the camp.
Oh, and the face that runs the place. AJ Styles is everything. But but I absolutely love The Miz here, right? Because The Miz has this chip on his shoulder lately, and he's gotten to be such, like, I think having Daniel Bryan call him out really just flipped a switch in Miz. And Miz was great before that, but now he really feels like he has something to prove. And he has Dolph Ziggler kind of pushing his buttons and, you know, saying shit about him about how you're not the main event. So then it makes perfect sense after being told that by Dolph Ziggler that he would want to be in the main event, right? And so he makes himself in the main event and takes out James Ellsworth. Sorry, David. Like, I kind of did love seeing James Ellsworth taken down here, even though I love James Ellsworth. James Ellsworth is fantastic. But James Ellsworth takes a beating fantastically, too. And he just rolled away like a rag doll, you know? He was like, no more James Ellsworth. He gets helped to the back. Poor James. I really hope we see him again. I really, really do. But I love the Miz being so vicious here and then teaming up with AJ Styles. I like that they don't necessarily have to be friends, but they don't really have a reason not to get along either, because why wouldn't the Miz support AJ Styles at this point? I mean, I'm sure the Miz would like to be champion, but he's not in this story. So I guess in that sense, it makes sense that he was the one that got beaten because he's not the one in this story. But the whole interplay of characters is really cool. Like, this feels very three-dimensional and fleshed out as far as all the characters involved. And that's cool. Like, that doesn't always happen, even in main event wrestling scene, right? Like, sometimes the character motivations seem really flat, or it's just you don't have a penis or whatever. And the character mo and John Cena did kind of edge into that John Cena territory at the beginning of the show, but it all feels very complex, and I'm kind of buying into the triple threat idea now, whereas I still don't necessarily think John Cena should be in the triple threat, but I get it. And I'm into it, and I'm into the build to the match, and I'm into the interplay of stories. I think Dean Ambrose getting booed was really interesting because they kind of booed him at the beginning too when he came out. This crowd did not like Dean Ambrose. So I kind of felt like, oh, I'm not alone. I kind of like this. This is refreshing. So I think that's, I don't know if it's just going to be this crowd or if that's more the overwhelming feeling of people behind Dean Ambrose. I'm really curious to see how, like, what sorts of reactions he gets in the weeks to come, because I thought Dean Ambrose was supposed to be popular. Like, I thought I was in the minority for not liking him, but the crowd was so behind John Cena. And this was in Philly. Like, I didn't expect Philadelphia to be that behind John Cena. Like, times they are a changin', I guess.
They are changing. So I guess on the thumb scale for this SmackDown, thumbs up, thumbs in the middle, or thumbs down.
Thumbs up. I like the SmackDown.
Yeah, I thought this was good. There wasn't really any sort of great wrestling, but there was decent stuff going on, good storyline development.
It was nothing
Yeah.
earth-shattering, but it was fun television, and stuff did come out of it. Like, we have matches made, we have a new number one contender for the women's championship. We
Think
have, you
No
know.
Mercy looks fun.
Yeah, No Mercy should be fun. I'm curious to
So,
see when American Alpha come back and
yeah, well, Jason Jordan was on Main Event this week.
oh, was he? Okay.
See, I watched the product, Sandra.
Main event hasn't aired yet, Kenny.
Well, I had a special press feed of it.
Oh, okay.
But I do want to just quickly say this because I want to just hear your reaction on air.
Oh, no.
According to PW Insider, WWE is already planning a follow-up to the Cruiserweight Classic for 2017, featuring an international array. You ready?
Okay.
Of female competitors.
I'm so excited!
It should be noted, however, that talk of doing a tournament featuring non-contracted women has been floating around for several months.
Yeah, there has been talk of it, and I've really hoped that it was going to happen because I think it could be great. And there are so many women that could be a part of this and make it so good. I'm so excited! Like, are they, this is actually going forward.
They're planning it.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
Unsurprisingly.
Well, no, because like I would I would like to just see a tournament of women who are all really good. Because
Yeah.
I cannot like the thing with WWE that's frustrating sometimes is like so you have like Sasha, Bailey, and Charlotte, who are all really good, but they were all still learning in NXT. But I'd love to see a bunch of like experienced women come in and just tear up. You know, like we saw with the Cruiserweight Classic.
Yeah.
Like the Cruiserweight Classic was all people who are very experienced. There was no botches, no sloppy stuff. It was all just really great stuff. And I'd like to see that from women as well. That'd be
Yeah.
good.
Get the
So.
Nikki Glenn crosses, the Kaylee Rays,
Yeah, just bringing all these people that can wrestle and don't need someone to carry them to a good match. So it
Wouldn't it
could
be
be
so
fun.
cool to see like Veda Scott in a WWE ring?
Lots of possibilities, which means that Shimmer is probably just going to be raided.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, they use a lot of Shimmer women for enhancement matches already. They seem to
And
have a
all
pretty good relationship with a lot of those women.
and also just to let you know that scheduled to return to action next week, Emma is back.
Really?
Yep.
Oh,
So
it's been way too long. Way too long. I
did
really
she
hope she
get
gets.
drafted somewhere? Or she
No.
not? She's not been. She's oh yeah, she was one of the four hottest free agents with Nikki Bella, The Rock, and The Undertaker. So I guess there's three left.
Yeah.
Watch out, Lewis Weapon Cart is listening. Doesn't need more ammunition against you. So
You know what? I will say, I just remembered this. This just popped into my head. And I don't remember when this even was. It was a couple weeks ago. Somebody asked me why I like Kane and I don't like The Undertaker. Because Kane actually does stories and is interesting on television.
That is true.
Like, Kane did awesome stuff with Daniel Bryan and Team Hell No. Kane as corporate Kane was kind of hilarious and awesome and was a part of the story. Kane feels like when he shows up and does stuff on WWE television, he's a part of the story. He's not above it. And he amuses me and he entertains me. And that's why I like Kane.
With that in mind, Sandra, where can we find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. And
And you
find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985 and follow Inside the Ropes at Inside underscore the Ropes. I almost just said follow Inside underscore the Ropes. Oh boy. I'm just so flustered about the idea of a women's tournament and Emma coming back. That was a lot of news to process all at once.
It was. It was. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the SmackDown summary. We will be back next week with more. Follow us on social media in the meantime, and check out our YouTube channel for more content going up this coming week. And we will see you soon. Bye.
Bye.